Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When it comes to clothes, it's great to have options. But having pieces that you can wear anywhere is a must for everybody. That's why American Giant makes clothing that fits into your life seamlessly, with quality you have to feel to believe. And with an impressive selection of staples to choose from, there's something for everyone. So whether you're on the hunt for the perfect t-shirt, a solid pair of jeans, or super soft sweatshirts, American Giant has what you're looking for. Each American Giant piece is designed to last and created with commitment to doing things better. And all their products are made right here in America. Because keeping things local ensures the kind of quality you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. Discover the American Giant difference today. Shop Wear Anywhere Closet Staples at American-Giant.com and get 20% off your order when you use code WA23 at checkout. That's 20% off at American-Giant.com, promo code WA23.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your co-host, Menners. Joining me this week is Paul, the Summer Game Dennett. How are you, mate?
Good, good. I'm very happy. I'm very happy with the cricket. I don't care that Australia lost these two games because it just doesn't matter. No one will remember the results in years to come. But I have been, as you know, bagging on about my delight that the cricket was returning to the BBC. And I reckon that the first few overs especially really showcased the very best of cricket. The England opening attack of Archer and Wood were quick and nasty. And the players had a real sort of joy to be playing. There was a lot of smiling in amidst the competition. And maybe I'm naive, but I think that maybe some hardcore football fans in England who haven't watched cricket for years would have felt that maybe the cricket was a bit of a breath of fresh air. Here's hoping anyway.
Ever since I've known you, you have been so passionate about the health of English cricket. Going back many years to a conversation we had with an English couple in the stands one afternoon. So it's great to have someone who's so passionate about the game all around the world. You know, I'm very Australian focused.
I must confess that occasionally when Australia loses a game to England, I think, you know, at least it will do good for the sport in England. I know that you have never come within a million kilometres of that emotion.
It's very foreign to me. All right, listeners, in this episode of Cricket Unfiltered, we're going to be wrapping up those two matches, Australia v England in the T20 series. Then we've got all the cricket headlines. There's been a few developments since last week's show in how next summer is looking. Then we've got some viewer mail, and we're going to finish like we always do with Can't Let It Go. But let's get straight into the T20 series between Australia and England. I guess the first thing to note to our listeners is we're recording this before the third game, but it'll probably be released around when the third game is being played or finished. So we won't be able to report on Australia's morale-boosting victory in the final game. So as we record this, the series is 2-0. And let's start with the first game. Well, just generally, Paul, I want to ask you, do you think Australia has looked rusty?
No, and I think that for the majority of that first game, they looked anything but rusty. I was getting quite cocky because I was sort of saying, well, okay, England have played Pakistan and the West Indies all summer. It's been a highly competitive summer. It's been good to watch. And now they've come up against the real, you know, welcome to first grade sort of moment. Here come the Aussies. The running between the wickets of David Warner was just sublime. The Australians' fielding was sharp. And when they were just cruising, you know, they needed, what, 39 off 38 with 9 wickets in hand. It was just like, oh, good on you guys. You've had your fun. Now the big boys are in town. And then, oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. In that, so I agree with you. I don't think you can use Australia's rust, any kind of rustiness as an excuse. You know, if you look at the first game, as you say, Australia were cruising and they lost. And they've done that in more recent T20 games before the lockdown. So it's a pattern that, you know, can't be blamed on sort of lack of match practice. I do think England have looked a bit sharper than Australia, especially in that second game, but that could just be ability and the fact that they've, you know, coming towards the end of their sort of abbreviated summer. But let's start with that first game. Australia chasing 163 to win, lost by 2 runs. It seemed to be going fine, but then Australia lost 4 for 9 in the middle order. It just seems frustrating, Paul, that we don't seem to have the powerful middle order hitters we need.
Yeah, I agree with that, although I think in this game that wasn't so much the problem. I think the problem was that to an extent they didn't quite – I don't think they played the same way that they would have played if this was a World Cup game. I reckon that Steve Smith, after playing – looking really good, he got about 18 off 11, and I think he's batting to prove to people that he is a T20 specialist as well as everything else that he does. And I think that – he doesn't like this notion that he has to slide down the batting order if we get off to a great start. So he tried to wallop one out of the ground. I think if that had been the World Cup final, he would have been taking the singles on offer. And I think that probably David Warner's shot as well was an example of that. So, then I think that towards the end, we did face that problem where Stoinis and Carey just found 7 or 8 runs and over a bit beyond them, and that was disappointing.
Yeah, I should clarify. It's not power I'm talking about. It's the ability to find the boundary in those closing overs. And I think however you look at these players individually, as a trio, they don't work together. And I'm saying Alex Carey, Marcus Stoinis and Ashton Agar, who are that sort of lower middle order, just aren't quite able to find the boundary consistently enough. And we've seen it before. As I said, there was a game against South Africa, similar situation. They just couldn't find the boundary. So Australia, you know, you look at these T20 comps around the world, and I was watching the CPL. There are lower middle order players who just have the knack of finding boundaries. And it's a bit about, you know, looking at the gaps in the field and being able to sort of manipulate the ball. And you don't always have to look pretty, and it doesn't always have to be the most technically correct shot. But you just need that sort of, you know, knack of getting that one boundary in an over to help you in these chases. And we just look so far from that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Mike Hussey player that you're looking for, someone who will take all those quick singles and won't get marooned. But as soon as he gets an opportunity, bang, bang, and suddenly his strike rate is, you know, sailing up above 150. I do think that we should consider Labuschagne. And I think that there's a belief that Labuschagne is too much in the what people perceive the Steve Smith mold to be. And that is that, yeah, he's a great test player and can be a very good one-day player, but the power hitting game of T20 is beyond him. Well, it was publicized that he got 100 off 50 balls in the intra-squad warm-up games. And I know those aren't real games, but still, again, 100 off 50 balls, you can't do that unless you can give the ball a decent wallop. And I just think that it's worthwhile getting him in the side. I mean, Marcus Stoinis didn't bowl in either of the first two games and doesn't look like he is the answer in the middle order. So I'd be keen to give Labuschagne an opportunity. What do you reckon?
Well, let's start with Stoinis in that first game, 23 not out off 18 balls. And it did display what I was talking about before. You know, he's got the nice shot down the ground, Stoinis. And of those 18 balls, he hit 1-6. But that's not good enough in that situation. He seems too limited. England were bowling well, but, you know, he was just trying the one shot, trying to hit straight basically the whole time. And it just wasn't coming off. There was no inventiveness, no variety. He wasn't moving across his stumps and looking for different areas in the field. So I think Stoinis has a lot to work on. And it's been well publicized that, you know, he bats at the top of the order in the Big Bash where that seems to suit his style more. He can hit straight. You know, the ball's hard. He can hit straight back over the bowler's head. But he just hasn't been able to do it. You know, we spoke about this concern before the series, and this has played out exactly like we thought. Stoinis was just not able to get the job done there. And then you mentioned Labuschagne. I mean, it's absolutely worth a crack. My concern is, will Marnus be able to play a different role? You've got Warner and Finch opening. You've got Smith at three. So you'd have Marnus at four at the very earliest, and then you could have Maxwell in your middle order. I wonder if Marnus can come in at four, you know, if there's six or seven overs to go and just hit boundaries straight away. I don't know. But as you say, if you're scoring 100 off 50 balls in an intra-squad game, then there's something there.
Yeah, and as you say, I think it's worth giving him a try. I was surprised that they went into with the same squad in the second game. I think these games are the sorts of games that they should be looking wider. And the other one that obviously comes into contention is Phillippe. Is he someone?
One more, buddy. My favorite player, Matty Wade. I was just about to. Matty Wade should be. He could have the gloves.
Yeah.
He could take over from Carey.
Of course.
You know, he's a boundary hitter in the middle order.
Yeah. No. Good point. No. Definitely, he's someone that should be considered as well, for sure. So I hope for the third game that they do throw things a bit wider and get some of those players in there.
So I guess, where do you stand on Alex Carey? He did so well in the 50-over World Cup last year. He's done well for the Adelaide Strikers at T20 level, so he can do it. But you know, is he the right mix? You know, I sort of feel that he and Agar are probably too similar, Ashton Agar.
I like them both because I think of Agar as primarily a bowling option who can then do something for us lower order in the lower order with the bat. And I suppose, to be fair to Carey and Stoinis, when they did get together, we had a situation where Finch, Smith, Warner and Maxwell had all got out in short order. They're four of the best batsmen that we've ever had. So there was a crisis situation, and they did almost get Australia across the line. So I think that you've got to give them some latitude that they didn't do too badly. So I'd still be willing to keep with Carey, but it's the same problem. We've got about 10 batsmen to fit into six spots, and it's very difficult given how similar that some of them are in standard to who's the right one. I certainly would be giving Labuschagne a go, though.
Yeah, I like that. I also like Wade coming in. Not sure if at the time is quite right yet for Phillippe. Yeah, Maxwell was criticised for getting out pretty softly in the first game of the series. The point was made that it was the last ball of Adil Rashid's spell, and, you know, should Maxwell have just patted it down the ground for a single and got, you know, got past that spell by Rashid. But I think Maxwell's a bit of a punching bag sometimes in these situations. You know, it wasn't the most terrible show I've ever seen.
And regular listeners to this show will know that I may be Glenn Maxwell's biggest fan in the whole world. I'd have him opening the batting for Australia in Test cricket. I'd have him playing for Australia in rugby league. I'd have him everywhere. The thing is that it was, and also you've got to acknowledge he bowled three overs and took 2 for 14. If he was just a bowler only and that was his only contribution, everyone would be saying, oh, you know, Maxwell had a good game. I think it was just, as you say, that sort of attempt to loft one over, or skim one over cover off the last ball of Rashid. He's so talented, sometimes just take the boring option, take the easy single. And it was a poor shot in the match situation, but as was the case with several of the others.
So a tight game first up, but then we got to the second game. And I have to say, Paul, I feared for Australia very early on in this game. We lost Warner for a duck and then Carey for two. For some reason, they sent Carey in at three. I have no idea why they did that. Do you know why they did that? why they would do that?
Well, I think it's that they're thinking in the World Cup, when the conditions almost replicated the start of a red ball game where the bowlers were on top, he was the one that, along with Smith, was really able to show some class there. And I think that's what they thought, that this bowling is tough and he's the man for the job.
Yeah, I would have preferred Steve Smith with a test average of about 65 going out at that point. So this game, I mean, I turned it off really early. I watched the rest the next day, but Australia were 2 for not many after a few overs. And I just went, we're not going to win this. We're gun shy after the first game. And it was proved right. They'd have been better off, instead of sending Carey out, send someone like Mitchell Starc and just say, take these guys on and hit a quick 20 or 30 and take the aggressive option, rather than what they did was they just meandered along to 7 for 157. And they were lucky to get that because of a few late boundaries. I thought they were gun shy after the first game and a little bit reticent to take the big risks that they needed to.
It's music to my ears, the notion of Mitchell Starc coming up the order. I think that should be something that they always consider, because half the time he doesn't get a bat or he barely faces a ball. And what have you got to lose? Throw him out there and say, just hit every ball for 6. And
the only snag is, I don't think Starc is a fan of this.
Why not?
I think we asked him in a press conference, and someone asked him, and his typical fast bowling attitude is, you know, aren't the batters supposed to do something?
I always say this as well, that it just didn't, it makes me happy to know how angry it would make Ian Chappell, because Ian Chappell is very much of that mindset. You know, you pick your batters to score the runs and you pick the bowlers to take the wickets. Why would you complicate that? But so every time they do bring in a pinch hitter and they succeed, it makes me happy. So, yeah, I think that'd be something that it should be tried more than it is, and it shouldn't be as controversial as it is. I find that bizarre that it's so, oh, this is an amazingly major change, and you've got Starc coming in ahead of Steve Smith. Isn't that insane? No, it's not. It does make sense when it's used correctly.
Yeah, so I thought Australia were never really in the hunt for this second game. Didn't have enough runs on the board. Stoinis 35 off 26, just a sort of an average innings. Glenn Maxwell, 26 off 18, got out just as he was getting going. Ashton Agar, here we go, 23 off 20. To me, that's not good enough. You get 20 balls at the end of a T20 innings, you got to be scoring at least 30. Yeah, worried about that lower middle order. England cruised to the target, 4 for 158. Butler, 77, not out.
Did you watch it, when you watched it on delay, Menas, did you know the result, or you watched it as live?
As live.
Okay. Because I thought maybe you were being influenced by the fact that Australia ultimately did lose. Because during the game, there was a point there where it looked like Australia was going to win right near the end. It was only Moeen Ali coming out and clonking a 6 and a 4 that blew the game wide open. I think that the start of the second last over, Australia had every chance of winning the game. And I think that it was a pretty disappointing performance from Adam Zampa, and probably not his best two matches together. I think that I'm not sure if he actually definitely will be the Australian spinner come the World Cup.
Yeah, right. I just thought England, with all those wickets in hand, looked pretty comfortable the whole time. I know you're very invested in the T20 team rankings, and the third match of this series has been played now. Is pretty influential that if Australia do win the third match, they go back to the top of the T20 rankings, and we can claim to be the greatest cricket nation in the world, because if you're ranked number one in T20 and number one in Test cricket, then you know, that's 2 out of the 3 formats you rank number one, so you're easily the best cricket nation in the world.
We can claim to be the best cricket nation in the world in the same way that Earth can claim to be the most hospitable planet to life in the solar system. The reason we're the best cricket nation in the world is the last 145 years of dominance, my friend.
Exactly.
In terms of the rankings, though, I love rankings and stats, but these are the ones that I just can't abide. Like, there's not enough T20 games played to make them worthwhile. I just had a look at the rankings for this at the moment. You still have matches that have been played from May 2017 onwards. And so what's that got to relevance to today? You know, there are players like Payne and Christian and Enriquez and Coulter Nile who are playing in some of those games. So I understand why they want to have them, but the only thing that matters in T20 internationals is winning the World Cup.
I must admit, I really enjoyed these two games of T20 cricket after Australia in any sport not playing at all. There's been no national representation since I think Australia played New Zealand at the SCG in March. So it was such a long time to see Australia play in any sport. I loved, especially that first T20, although Australia botched it. I mean, it was edge of the seat stuff. The second one, it was a bit flatter for me, but yeah, loved it. That doesn't take much away from me, the fact that there's no crowd there. Obviously, the atmosphere is different, but I've said before, I think cricket viewers are conditioned to watching with less crowds than a lot of sports because of, you know, fourth and fifth days of tests where there's not a lot of people there. This is obviously the extreme, but I enjoyed it.
I have loved these two games as well. But one thing that I did notice was before the first game, they had on some extended highlights from the World Cup. And I watched it, the Australia-England pool game. I watched about 20 minutes of it. It was magical. I just wanted to be there. And I suddenly realised how much I do miss the crowds being in. The shots that they were having of the various people in Lords enjoying themselves and the colour and the spectacle. It was magnificent. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from, but I can't wait till crowds can come back.
I mean, I agree. And I've been starting to get a little bit of, I guess, cricket depression is probably the right word. You know, I always find that at the end of a season, I get pretty down and the winter months are pretty hard for me because I'm not a football fan. You know, the local codes, which shall remain nameless. I did notice you ran an NRL quote that you dropped in at the top of the show about welcome to first grade. But anyway, well, that slide.
That could be a cricket quote. That's
well, we know it's not, though. We know it's not. It's a pretty famous rugby league quote. But now that we're coming to the end of the winter and it's spring here in Sydney, and normally now I'd be start to look at the Shield schedule and look at what games we're going to commentate on or what games are in Sydney, and there'd be the Marsh One Day Cup starting soon. The reality that whatever cricket we get next summer is going to be severely restricted, and you know, we're not going to be able to get out to much, if any. It's quite depressing that summer as we know it is not happening this year. And, it's just made me a bit down, I've got to say.
Well, I want to lift you because I'm much more optimistic than that. Obviously, it won't be the same as a summer would have been without the virus. But, as early as today, they are still talking about holding the Boxing Day Test match at the MCG with a crowd, albeit a crowd. They haven't given a figure that I've seen, but it feels like they're talking about a crowd in the order of 20,000 or something like that, so you can space out and have five seats per person and that sort of thing. Now, if that's what's been talked about for happening in Melbourne in 2.5 months' time, the city that has been at this stage by far the most affected by coronavirus, then, you know, if things keep on going well, I think that does show a pathway towards potentially the summer being more normal than you think. So, you know, don't get too down. It might actually be closer to a normal summer than you fear.
I hope so. I just, you know, one of my great memories of the last few summers is those, you know, many nights at the Big Bash and, you know, the warm summer nights with the smattering of the crowd in their various Big Bash colours. So anyway, we'll see. All right, that's the series in England. 2-0 at this stage, probably 2-1 while you're listening to this. We're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back with the cricket headlines. Now, I want to play some audio of Kane Richardson speaking in England he's talking about Marnus Labuschagne's, Dave Warner and Adam Zampa's cafes in their hotel rooms. But I guess what we only touched on it briefly last week was that Kane Richardson has given up, an $800,000 contract to be at the birth of his first child. Now, they say when you have a child, it costs you $1 million to raise that child. Well, this kid's come out, you know, negative 800,000K already. I mean, a lot of pressure to put on the kid.
I suppose you could say to the kid, if you could imagine him in 20 years or her in 20 years saying, exactly. Would you rather at $800,000 in a trust fund for you now or swap that for your dad being at your birth?
I'm pretty sure they'd go the former. All right, here's Kane Richardson.
Marnus has set up his little machine. I think Dave bought one over here and he tried to one-up Marnus, so he bought a better machine. So I'm not sure that necessarily means a better cup of coffee, but boys are trying to please all their teammates, which is nice for those who want a coffee fix.
Sampa said the Love Cafe is an invite only. Do you have an invite?
I've never actually asked for an invite. I don't think he's invited me, no, but it's not my cup. Again, not my cup of coffee, I guess I'll say, because he doesn't like putting milk with his coffees. So, yeah, he's a bit of a coffee snob, I think. He tries to buy the best beans, the most expensive beans. To me, it all tastes the same. So I'll just stick with Lovey's Cafe.
Welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menas. I'm with Paul. You just heard Kane Richardson. Well, there you go. He backed you up, Paul. You were saying last week that you think this whole coffee thing's a bit of snobbery gone mad. Well, Richo's backed you up.
In my mouth. I didn't say it was a bit of snobbery gone mad. I just said I think that they people like to think they've got a more sophisticated palate than they do. In our new podcast, where it's going to be just coffee tasting, which, as I said, is going to be.
We're doing this, by the way. We're doing this.
What an audio only effect that will be. I also want to get some wine out there and give
it'll be a video special.
People some red wine that's been in the fridge and blindfolded, and tell them it's a Chardonnay, and they're like, oh yeah, it is a Chardonnay.
Well, I think there is definitely differences in coffee. I think you can have bad coffee and good coffee.
Oh, no, I agree with that, but I'm saying the difference between good quality cafe coffee and what Zampa thinks he's producing, that's going to be very hard to prove the difference as well.
Oh, well, that might be true. All right, let's get into the headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. So news has come to hand that Australia and India will not be quarantining in Western Australia after the WA government refused to bend any rules on quarantining, and basically the WA government would not allow the Australian and Indian teams to quarantine and train at the same time. What do you think, Paul?
I think a lot of people will hear that and say, oh, come on, you know, you're taking things too far. But I think you have to put yourself in the place of the Premier of Western Australia. You are responsible for the lives and the livelihoods of well over 2 million people. And you look around the world and you look at some of the disasters that have occurred in different places, and also places that have been going quite well. I mean, like Israel, a couple of months ago, had almost no virus cases. Now, per capita, they're kind of topping the world. You look at Victoria, and you just got to say, how certain can I be that these players who are coming from, if they come from India, where sadly the virus is at the point where now it's sometimes 90,000 a day, even if they are coming via the UAE, Perth doesn't have a hotel connected to the ground. So you're going to have a few dozen players that you're going to take on trust that they're all going to do the right thing. And we've seen so far, you know, Jofra Archer breached the protocols in England. We've had the Richmond Tigers up in Brisbane breaching protocols. There's a breach in Perth from a Sydney Swans player. You're relying very heavily on something that you can't control, where the worst case scenario, although unlikely, is disastrous. And I think you have to err on the side of being conservative.
Yeah, I guess as well, Western Australia at the moment is relatively unaffected by the coronavirus. And if you speak to the locals there, they're going about their day-to-day life pretty normal. And if the Premier were to put that in jeopardy or end that because of this, then he would be, you know, thrown out of office, effectively, you would think. It does mean that Western Australia could potentially miss out on any international cricket next summer, and you can even extrapolate they might even miss out on any Big Bash as well. So, you know, that could have severe ramifications. I heard Robert Craddock on the radio talking to Jared Waitley yesterday saying that he thinks the test between Afghanistan and Australia is at best 50-50. So, you know, this decision does affect the summer greatly.
Yeah, that test match, I mean, in some ways I think they should just cancel it and say to Afghanistan, look, we'll make it up to you. Maybe we'll give you a couple of test matches in a couple of years after the rescheduled T20 World Cup. Because the Australian players to have to go into quarantine and the Afghanistani players to do that, and then to play on either the Wacker or Optus Stadium in brutal wicket with virtually no preparation, the Afghanistani players are going to really struggle. And we don't want to see a 2.5-day thrashing. I'd far rather let them come into the country properly, acclimatise with the World Cup, and then play a couple of test matches in, say, Canberra and Hobart in a couple of years' time. So I think that they should let this one go.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the most sensible decision. So the rumours are that the Test series against India will begin in Adelaide, that the teams will go and quarantine in Adelaide. Then they'll play the first test there. Then they will schedule the MCG test for Boxing Day. But if that's not able to go ahead, then they will play the second test as well in Adelaide. So it would be back-to-back tests in Adelaide, which would be a great couple of weeks there. Can you imagine? I mean, I don't know if we're allowed to go, Paul, but can you imagine going to Adelaide and just spending 2 weeks watching two tests, basically? It'd be fantastic. Assuming you could get in. And then they'll finish with the SCG and the Gabba in January. So that's the way the test series against India is looking. What do you think?
I think it's smart. I think that idea of having the MCG, almost you give it as long as possible before you have to cancel it. And then you've got the players already in Adelaide. They can just stay there. And then it's quite smooth. I think it's a good contingency plan. I listened to, again, on Jared Waitley, I listened to the Victorian sports minister this morning, and he was talking, I thought he made a lot of sense. He was talking optimistically, but still recognising that it wasn't a certainty. But, you know, he was giving the impression, if I could quantify it, that it sounded like, you know, 70-30, that it would go ahead. Those are my numbers, not his. So that would be pretty cool. If you get a Boxing Day test match with 20,000 people per day at the MCG, that would be an amazing result.
All right, the next cricket headline. Well, I'll start the headline with a question, Paul. Do you think a carnival-style travelling Big Bash will work next summer? So head of the BBL, Alistair Dobson, was interviewed on ca.com.au, and he said that the way things are looking, that the Big Bash will be all eight teams travelling around the country playing in, you know, sort of carnival styles in different major centres to play the tournament. What do you think of that idea?
It sounds like a fairly decent compromise at first blush, that the notion of trying to play it normally might just be too difficult. But I would imagine that Channel 7 would be saying, okay, well, you really do have to give us a discount now, because the crowds will have to be sizably impacted by that, and the atmosphere suffers as a result. And I think that Channel 7 should ask for and should receive a discount for that, and it's nobody's fault. Sounds like it's handling a difficult situation in possibly the best way to me.
Yeah, it would be pretty incredible having eight teams traveling around the country together, almost like a traveling circus. The other sort of development around the Big Bash is that Australia are looking at moving the one-day series that was scheduled against New Zealand in January, looking at moving that to either sort of February after the Big Bash is completed. And I think that just makes 100% common sense. Move that series and allow Australia's best white ball players to at least play the sort of back end of the Big Bash.
I think it definitely makes sense, as long as New Zealand are happy with it, because I'm the first to get angry with
it. They're never happy with us.
I'm the first to get angry with when India do things that I feel is, you know, sort of bullying in their own interests, that we shouldn't then sort of do the same thing to a smaller nation than us. That if New Zealand aren't happy with that, then I think that would be disappointing. But if they're okay with it, then I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think we have to start to make the Big Bash more of a priority. That's definitely what Channel 7 wants, and I think this is the first step. But then let me flip that. So, you know, you look at the way the bubbles are going to function in international cricket and domestic cricket. Can we expect a lot of these Australian players who may have been in international bubbles for months and months and months, when they get released from the Australian side, can we actually expect them to go and play the Big Bash? I mean, if they haven't been at home for months on end, are we going to expect them to go into another bubble and play the Big Bash, or should we, you know, let them go back and see their families?
A very good question, because the easy answer is to say, well, they're professionals and that's what they've got to do, and it's unusual times and we've got to do the right thing by the sport, and that's all true. And also the easy thing is to say, oh, how hard is it? You know, you're waking up in a lovely green cricket stadium and living a fairly good life. But everyone who's spoken about it has said that by the time that they were coming towards the end of their tour in England, both West Indies and Pakistan were starting to say, we've had enough of this. And that was relatively short spaces of time. So I think they have to take it seriously. And I think they've got to be flexible. The last thing you want to do is a player who's come to the edge of their tether say, right now, you've got to go back into a bubble and play Big Bash. They should sort of say to them, do you want to? And if they're, yep, I'm up for it, I'm loving it, fine. But if they need a break, they should be allowed to get the break, and they shouldn't be made to feel as though they are in some way harming cricket.
Mm. I mean, you look at players, say, like an Aaron Finch or a Pat Cummins that play in the white ball formats. You know, you can have Aaron Finch say he's in England now in a bubble. He's going to go to an IPL bubble, which is his own choice, but he's going to do it. Then he's going to go from there back into Australia to quarantine for a couple of weeks. Then he's going to play the white ball series against India. Eventually then, that's probably when they could let him out of the bubble, the end of sort of mid to late December when the one days are finished against India. So mid-December, say. So then he's been in, you know, what, 3 or 4 months he's been in a bubble. We say, okay, now can you go into a Big Bash bubble for the next 6 weeks? You know, that's a lot to ask. And I just don't know whether a lot of these players are going to be able to do that. The other thing that Alistair Dobson discussed in this interview was about a marquee fund. So they're discussing, you know, Cricket Australia paying to bring in some big name players. I think this is a good idea. You know, we are at a stage, though, and I'm going to read between the lines. You know, the Australian Cricketers Association, for all the good work they do, they also do put up a lot of roadblocks. So they've said they don't want any of this money coming out of the players' end of the deal for a marquee fund. So again, it's going to have to come out of the money from all the other revenue, which from a union point of view makes sense, but from the overall health of the competition certainly doesn't make sense. And again, the ACA are trying to block a third international player being allowed in Big Bash 11. And, you know, the ACA will say, well, that's a, you know, 8 jobs away from Australian cricketers. Well, I would say that's also a huge blow to the Big Bash. So, you know, we seem to be slowly edging towards some movement here, but from my reading between the lines is it's some pretty heavy negotiations behind the scene. And finally, on the sort of Big Bash, you'll be happy with this one. Jaleesa's boss, Hugh Marks, the head of Channel 9, said the door was never closed on cricket. I figured that would make you happy, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you would be mad to close the door on cricket, but I think that the way that Channel 9 would be viewing things at the moment, it would be along the lines of, you know, make us an offer if you want, but we'll be very, very demanding in what we're expecting.
All right, the final cricket headline. Well, the Women's Big Bash League is going to be played entirely in Sydney starting from October. The entire 59-game WBBL season will start on October 25th and run right through into early November. This is a great result for the broadcasters now. You know, we talk about Seven and Fox complaining about the costs and the price of everything. Well, having the WBBL in one city will significantly save on their costs. So that's something that they'll be happy about. I just hope that they think about maybe broadcasting more games on TV. So at the moment, it's slated that 26 of the 59 games will be on Seven and then simulcast on Fox Cricket. With the sort of, you know, lack of sport at the moment, wouldn't you think about showing a lot more of those games on TV?
I love it if they did. I think that everyone's in such a defensive mindset at the moment in terms of trying to stop every dollar going out the door. I think they'd be very reluctant to spend any more money broadcasting more games.
So, yeah, it's all going to be held in Sydney. That means the 8 teams are going to be in a bubble and they're going to use, you know, a variety of venues in Sydney starting next month, Paul. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty glum right now, but hopefully at the end of October I'll be at some WBBL if I can get in the ground. All right, we'll take a quick break, then we'll be back with a viewer mail and Can't Let It Go. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menes. I'm with Paul, and it is viewer mail time. Well, viewer tweet time, to be specific, Paul. I received a couple of tweets from our English listeners.
Yeah, one from Diddley Squat, who said, "Was surprised that Menas restrained himself to only four England players, to be honest. Was half expecting his number one to be every England player ever. Half the joy of tuning in is to hear Menas pom bashing, saying, no need to worry, Jaleesa. Do love this podcast." And Diddley Squad is referring to, if you haven't heard it, last show, Menas went through his top 11 most hated players of all time, and there were quite a few English players in there.
Can I just interject there? There's been a bit of controversy about why I didn't put Kevin Peterson in this team. And it's a tough one because I actually liked watching Kevin Peterson bat. Like, you know, as I said, he was a dynamic batsman and I enjoyed watching him bat. Obviously, he was abrasive and he used to rub people up the wrong way, but certainly wasn't one of my most hated players the way he played.
Oh, he's a wonderful player to watch bat. And in my opinion, the best English batsman the last 50 or 60 years.
Boy, did he eyeball you when we interviewed him after a big bash game.
When I asked him about, he thought I was trying to trick him, but I wasn't trying to trick him. I just couldn't, I was so nervous, I couldn't think of anything else to ask. And so I asked the question about who should be the Australian spinners. And it was intense to ask him. The next one is from JWL80 on Twitter, who says, "Morning, Menas. Hope you enjoy your cornflakes. Hearing about an epic Aussie choke."
Referring to the first T20 game. All right, then we got two lovely reviews. The first one, thank you from Peter Volandis. "Thanks for the shout-out, Menas. Your endorsement of my work in the great game of rugby league means the world to me. Kindest, Peter Volandis." So, I mean, who's not listening to this podcast? I mean, the head of rugby league's listening.
Yeah, and one day you'll be able to pronounce his name properly.
How do you say it?
You pronounce it as though you're English at the end. You say Peter Volandis. It's Peter Volandis.
Peter Volandis.
Yeah.
Manus Labuschagne.
Well done. Peter Volandis. Excellent.
Getting there. And the other review was from America, from AMB3629. America. Well, we've got fans all around the world. "For cricket fans, this is a must listen, whether in AU or around the world. This is great." Thank you to AMB for the review. And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can go to @AusCricketPod. That's AUS Cricket Pod. That's our Twitter and Instagram handle. If you'd like to reach out to me personally regarding the contest between Australia and England, I'm on @AMENERS, AMENERS. I do like some of our English listeners. Not many, but I do like some of you. So it's always nice to hear from you on Twitter. Where can they find you on social media, Paul?
_summer_game on Twitter. And look for us at Cricket Unfiltered on TikTok if you haven't already.
Well, we're still allowed to use it in this country. All right, let's end the show the way we end all our podcasts, with that little bit of cricket news you just can't let go through to the keeper. Paul, what can't you let go of?
Well, we always seem to be referring to Warnie in these. Even with Jaleesa not here today, I'm going to reference the great man. And I don't entirely disagree with him, because he's tweeted out an unsourced study that he's found which has listed the world's most popular sports, and they've got a whole raft of criteria, sensible criteria in terms of participation and viewership and all the normal things, but their conclusion is that cricket is the second most popular sport in the world, and they've ascribed it 2.5 billion estimated fans. And I would love this to be true. I would love this to be true, but cricket does not have 2.5 billion fans. That is a nonsensical thing. And to further degrade the quality of this study, they've listed that the fourth biggest sport in the world is field hockey, with 2 billion estimated fans. Now, they would probably think that Australia is a big country for field hockey, because we're listed on there as one of the places it's played. I mean, who's going out to the hockey this weekend? Who's got the TV rights for the hockey? Who's your favourite hockey player? Now, I like hockey. I've even watched it once, I think, when we won a gold medal in the Olympics in 1988 or something. But
it's a very good sport to watch, actually, on TV.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. But what this gets me at is that this this study is clearly well-meaning, but I would have great criticisms of its methodology. But Warnie, he's referring to it as fact. He's sort of saying it's a fact that cricket is the world's number two sport. And cricket's probably close to that. It may be the world's number three, but it hasn't got 2.5 billion fans. And as time goes by, I think Warnie will just have this as an established fact in his mind that in months and years to come, this is, you know, incontrovertible, whereas it's actually nonsensical. So that's what I can't let go.
Yeah, that's a good one. Now, I've got a couple that I can't let go of this week. Well, the first one is they announced the IPL schedule and it's going to kick off on the 19th of September. And it's actually midnight our time, so it's the 20th in Australia for all our Aussie listeners. But this is by far the most excited I've been about any IPL. With the lack of international cricket over the last 6 months, I cannot wait for the IPL to get going. There's going to be basically a T20 game on every day. Each team is full of stars. I mean, you know, it's not the Big Bash. You don't have, you know, players being pulled from lower levels of Indian cricket. This is, you know, full of stars. There's tons of Aussies involved. Cummins is over there getting paid, you know, $3 million for 6 weeks' work. Hazelwood's going over there. I mean, there's going to be, I don't know the number, but there's going to be a lot of Australian cricketers there, including Shane Watson still going around for Chennai. So, yeah, I can't wait for the IPL. Starts on the 19th of September. And then the other can't let it go, well, two can't let it go, is Ian Bell's retired, the Shermanator, the last active player from the 2005 Ashes. He's retired from first-class cricket in England. And, yeah, the CPL, the Caribbean Premier League, has finally concluded its group stage, and the finals and the semifinals are on this week. And again, I've enjoyed the CPL. I don't know if you've watched any of it, Paul, but it's been lowish scoring because of the wickets, but they haven't been affected by rain as much as they thought. And yeah, I've enjoyed it. The group stage is kind of faded out because the sort of the lower teams didn't really compete, and in a 6-team comp and 4 in the semis. So the last couple of rounds sort of lost the sizzle, but cannot wait for the semifinals. Trinbago Knight Riders won 10 out of 10 group games. And the team that Ben Duncan, Chris Lynn played for, the Patriots, won 1 out of 10 with 8 losses and 1 no results. And not a good CPL for Chris Lynn especially, and he'll need to bounce back in the IPL. Well, I guess that's it for this edition of Cricket Unfiltered. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in again. We're starting to get into some real action, to talk about. Jaleesa couldn't make it today, so she'll be back next week, hopefully. Paul, any parting words for our listeners?
After this final T20, there are 3 1 days between Australia and England. If any of you out there does intend to watch every ball, please, and if you do so successfully, please let us know, because I'd like to acknowledge you, because it's going to be very, very difficult. I'm going to try, but it's going to go all night long.
Well, that's it for this episode of Cricket Unfiltered. We'll be back next week with another show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.